Blog Talk Radio.
And
hear me? Hello, Brian? You hear me? Okay, great. All right, very good, very good. Okay, we're just going to claim that it's going to work well tonight. We had some technical difficulties last week that did not allow us to move forward with our planned show, so we moved it to this week, and we are so excited. We have a wonderful, wonderful guest this evening. And, you know, the glitch may be with the music, because I tried to play our intro spot, and it just kind of kept twirling, you know, like that beach ball that twirls on the computer. So we're not going to worry about that. We're going to move forward. This is Stepping Into My Power Blog Talk Radio Show. This is Dr. Imani Ma'at, and I have my co-host, Brian Stevens. Brian, say hello to everyone, please.
Hello to everyone in the whole United States, I guess, if they're listening.
So. Yeah, we have. I'm looking at the board. It's lit up. We have people listening in from all over. So that is very, very exciting. For those who are new, Stepping Into My Power started back 5 years ago. And I was checking some of our stats. This is actually the 95th show of Stepping Into My Power Blog Talk Radio Show. So that in and of itself is very, very, very exciting. That's why I get just really kind of crazy when things don't work right with the technical part from the station. But we're good. You hear me? We're on. And we did a couple of sound checks. So we are ready to roll. And so we don't need any music tonight. We have such a powerful show lined up. We have a wonderful, wonderful guest this evening. I'm going to give you some of the background information about our wonderful guest. Her name is Professor or Dr. Uwa Onioha Osimiri. She is the spiritual head of the Global Faith Ministries of Chiism, president of the African Women's Economic Consortium, and founder of the Chiist Higher Learning Corporation. Dr. Osimiri is the president of the Chiist Higher Learning Corporation, or CHLC. This organization is the accrediting body for the Chiist University, for which she is the founder and chancellor. So we're going to hear about the university. Wonderful, wonderful plans are in place for the university. It is the umbrella corporation for the Global Faith Ministries of Chiism and the African Women's Economic Consortium. Dr. Osimiri was an official delegate to the United Nations World Council of Religions for Peace, the WCRP. And it's Africa's most senior religious leadership conference on HIV and AIDS and orphan children. It was held in Nairobi, Kenya on June 9th through the 12th of 2002. An ambassador for peace, she has participated in the international leadership conferences sponsored by the Federation for World Peace in Washington, Hawaii, and Virginia. She's instrumental for initiating the Village of Hope, a housing initiative to affect the care of orphans in Nigeria and then actually globally. Dr. Osimiri conducts women's empowerment workshops, including her Write Your Own Story workshops, for which she conducted for the Chrysler Corporation and Youth Empowerment Series called Yes, Workshops for Youth. And Dr. Osimiri doesn't know I had a teen theater program called Yes. So we've got a number of overlapping things going on. And with that, I am going to unmute the lines and introduce Dr. Osimiri.
Hello, everyone.
Dr. Osimiri.
Hello.
Evening.
Thank you so much
for joining us.
It is my pleasure. I'm quite honored to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, You're so welcome. And I want to tell our listeners one more thing, because I gave all of your credentials, some of your credentials. I know it's not even half of what you're doing, but I'd like to give the personal touch. And it was such a pleasure to visit in your home. Dr. Osimeri's home looks like a museum. She has artwork and a lot of carvings from Africa and masks from Africa on her walls and lots of original artwork. And it wasn't until the end of my visit to her home that I found out that she is the artist, of amazing, amazing artist. So for someone who is just multi-talented and just so kind and so humble. So with that, I again welcome you to the show this evening, Dr. Osimeri.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here.
Thank you. Thank you. And I know, you know, I have so many things I want to ask you, but could you please tell us a little bit about the CHIIST program and the university and just tell us about that, because I know that's a new term for a lot of our listeners.
Okay. The African Continental, it's originally we called it CHIIST University because it's related to our spirituality, which is CHIISM, Africa's spiritual mm-hmm. tradition of direct communication with God. So we formed mm-hmm. a university as the academic component of it, but we changed it to African Continental University, and right now we're going through our accreditation. It is an exciting program, and the reason why we had to formulate this university was to give our students something a bit different from what they're used to. I'm a professor at a university, and I'd rather not call the name of the university, but I love the university. I love the work that I do, but one of the things mm-hmm. that I find that's missing is something that particularly since you have a lot of individuals who are African, we don't have books, you know, that are written by Africans. So it's mm-hmm. really not information that they can really fully relate to their communities, you know, something like that. So the whole idea, mm-hmm. I got my doctorate in natural theology and also my doctorate in clinical psychology. And I was wondering what to do with all that knowledge. I thought it was going, mm-hmm. it was imperative. As a matter of fact, my father, who was the spiritual head of CHIISM, he had told us, all his children, we're not asking you to go to school. I'm not asking you to go to school so that you can make money for me. I'm asking you to go to school so that I can be proud of you. I can brag about you, and you can be mm-hmm. of you know, of service to the community. So in forming the African Continental University, the whole idea is to begin the process of providing a world-class university that's online. And in addition to that, we're going to have satellite programs throughout Africa, starting with Nigeria. And it's online to start with, but like I said, we're going to have satellite programs. And what we want to do is provide the students the opportunity, you know, to incorporate cultural-based research so that they can achieve relevant educational skills that they can use to improve and uplift their own communities, as well as their mm-hmm. own personal growth and objectives. You know, so nation building and service to their communities mm-hmm. are imperatives at African Continental University, you know. So what we're trying to do is, and was excited, quite frankly, about African Continental University, is that upon graduation, if they get to the level of a master's degree, because we offer undergraduate, master's, and doctorate, but if they get to the master's level, and before they graduate, all of them have to turn in a proposal, and that proposal will be funded if the university accepts it. We will fund whatever that proposal, whatever the objectives are, provided, of course, that they're going to do whatever that work is within the African community. That could be in Africa, it could be in African American communities, it could be in the Caribbean, mm-hmm. wherever, you know, they will want to fund that. So that we want our students to know there's something, there's an African proverb that says, Akum Dede Opane, which is the motto of our university, Akum Dede Opane. That means my wealth lies outside of me. My wealth lies outside of my community. So it's not about me getting an education and then getting wealthy and moving into the suburbs or anything of that nature. That's still your prerogative. Mm-hmm. But the whole idea is once you get this education, it's got to be your community. The growth of your community is a reflection of you. So walking around and being proud, I've got this education, I've got that, and your community is dying or looks disheveled and in disrepair, then there's no pride in that. So that's African. That's an African cultural perspective that we bring to the university. I just want to point out some of what we teach. We offer agricultural sciences. The good news, of course, is that most of Africa now is going towards agriculture, and that's very, very critical. So that's a very important. And then we have African studies, behavioral sciences. We offer business administration, education, information systems and technology, leadership, linguistics. What's interesting about linguistics is we plan to have every student who attends the university has to take an African language. They have to learn an African language because you know that is something that's dying. You know, when you lose your language, when you lose your language, that's the worst thing that can happen to you. And quite frankly, unfortunately, throughout Africa, we're not encouraging our children to learn how to speak the language, right? The kids are going to school and they're learning. Everything is in English. So what we want to do is we want to change that. And not only would our textbooks be written by African minds, you know, it's a global world, so we expect some books are going to certainly be written by others, but we want the bulk of the books that the students are going to read, study, the research they're going to do will come from the from books and research done by African people all over the world. So that makes their education relevant. Yes, you were going to say something?
It sounds like you're a wonderful, wonderful concept and plan, and it sounds like you're reaching out to Africans around the diaspora, around the whole world, to kind of come together and understand the culture and their roots, because part of that is tapping into their strength and their wisdom and abilities and all of that. So there's been a lot of separation, you know, clearly with slavery and everything else. So it sounds like you're trying to pull back together and have a university. So do you anticipate having students from places like Brazil and Panama and England and all over where, you know?
It's an international school. It's an international school. So it's going to be, it's available to anyone, really, anyone, provided those who attend the university understand it's an African-centered school. It has African-centered curriculum. That doesn't stop anyone. I mean, people go to schools that, quite frankly, have European precepts, you know, so we understand that. But whoever comes to our university understands that this is an African-centered university. And additionally, we do offer religious studies because I think it's important. One of the things that's lacking in our communities is the capacity to ask questions and know it's all right when things are different from what you believe. You understand? Part of what makes us educated is not because we know one thing. It's important that we know as much as there is to know. As a matter of fact, African spirituality demands that you do that. It demands that you learn. Knowledge is power. You can't just, you know, accept one little item and consider yourself educated. So we're doing religious studies where we are going to learn. Our students will learn about world religions. That's very important. And in this case, it's got to have to incorporate African spiritual precepts. And then, of course, renewable energy. That's very critical. That's where, you know, Africa's got all that energy. We've got all that energy. And we don't have electricity. Can you imagine that? So renewable energy is very, very important.
That doesn't make any sense. I mean, with solar power and everything, I mean, it makes sense for you to tap into the sun where you are, you know, being in the equator. many countries in Central Africa. I mean, it only makes sense. So that is absolutely amazing. I'm very, very inspired by your university and the fact that you speak of lifelong learning. You know, I always tell people, you know, just because you have a doctorate doesn't mean you stop learning. So, you know, we have to be lifelong students and stay open to learning because there's so much out here that we can learn that can help us as individuals, as family, as community. So I love the fact that you're extending community to the global community. And that you're planning on accepting proposals from your graduates and funding them so that they can do good work outside of themselves. I think that phrase, "My wealth lies outside of my community," is very, very powerful. And people have to stop and think about that. We're in such an ego-centered and individualistic type society here. You know, I'm going to get all that I can get for me. And that's so limited in perspective, and you really don't get much when you're just focusing in on yourself. So I like the way that you have conceived the university and the work that you're going to do there. So tell us a little bit about I want to know about the Village of Hope, but I also want to know what brought you to creating this village for children, for orphaned children in Nigeria and other countries as well. You told a beautiful story, and I'd love for you to tell that to our listeners about the little Kenyan boy.
Okay, so you know what?
I want you to speak.
Okay. You know, I had a story that I did not share with you. I was kind of holding that back. Before I tell you about the Kenyan boy, I had traveled to Nigeria to visit the then governor's wife, Ifeoma Ojoosokalo. I had she invited me to come, and it was sort of like she didn't quite tell me. Of course, I went home to visit my family, but at the same time, her PRO, you know, came and told me that the governor's wife wanted to meet me. To see me, and he'll come early in the morning, very early in the morning, and pick me up, because she wanted me to see something. I wasn't quite sure what she wanted me to see, but when I got there, I noticed something. It was quite early in the morning, and I noticed that there were little bundles that were being brought to the gate, and you know, people are dropping off these little bundles. And after a while, and I started hearing all this crying, after a while, I realized that these are babies. Babies that were just being dropped off by the gate.
Wow.
So when I finally went in there, it was amazing. And then the babies are being picked up and taken to her. And when I finally got to see her, she says, "I wanted you to see what I'm faced with. Everybody thinks because I am the governor's wife, I can handle these things." She says, "Every day. Babies, orphan babies everywhere. The orphanages are overflowing, you know." So she wanted me to see that. And she asked me, "What do I think can be done about this?" So that was weighing down on me. And then my father, who was not very well, was invited to come to Nairobi, Kenya, as one of the Africa's most senior religious leadership to be a part of Africa's most senior religious leadership conference on HIV/AIDS. And because he couldn't go, and I was the continental envoy for theism or Gordianism, I had to go in his stead. So when we arrived at the airport in Nairobi, Kenya, I will never forget all the young people who came to the airport to visit us. The delegates came from all over the world. And many of these children, as we got in the buses, because the United Nations buses came to pick us up, and you know, some of these young people from the University of Kenya, they had to come with us. So they were telling us stories about their lives. All of these young people were infected with HIV. And they seemed to have accepted that they were going to die because they didn't have the medication that could help them, you know, that was not very readily available to all of them. So many of them had accepted the fact that they were going to pass away. And it, when we, all of us, were shocked to hear that, they, you know, they just shook their heads and said, well, this is life. This is how it is for young people in Kenya. You know, the infection was high at that time anyway. And that was that was what they were faced with. So anyway, during the conference, during one of the opening sessions, a young boy of about 7 was brought to us. His name was Salim Yassin. Salim was 7 years old. And just a tiny little thing, and they lifted him up and put him on the dais. And he paused for quite a while, staring at the audience, and we didn't know what to expect, really. So we were staring right back at him. And then suddenly he just yelled it out. He said, "Why? Why do you let me die? Why do you let the children die? Why do you fail the children? Why must death be our destiny?" And he looked at me. I wasn't sure he was looking at me, but I was quite colorfully dressed in my African attire. So he kind of zeroed in on me there. And he says, "Mama, why do you let me die? You know, you were," and he, you know, he sort of chastised us and told us, "Look at us. All of us come to the fancy hotels. We eat our fancy food. We have a fancy conversation. And we walk over the kids in the streets." But he says, "Unfortunately, we're all going to leave and leave him behind. And leave all the children behind. Why must death be their destiny?" And they brought him down, and he walked away. He had lost his, it was from Isiolo, Kenya, northern Kenya. And he had lost his mother, his father, his brothers and sisters. He was alone in the world, and he was telling us that, "I am alone. And it doesn't need to be that way. You need to do something." So anyway, at the end of the conclusion of the conference, we were charged with going out wherever we came from and become the voice. The voice for the children, to speak for the children. When I arrived back, I was living in Michigan at that time. When I arrived back at Michigan, I was very bothered by what that child said, not to mention all those young people who were dying of HIV. So I brought some business women together, and I asked them, I said, "You know what? There's an African proverb. It takes a village to raise a child. What happened to that proverb? We need to reenact it into the present and make it a reality again. We need to form an organization," and that was the African Women Economic Consortium. Economic because these women owned businesses, so they had the capacity to help make a change. Mm-hmm. I said, "Besides us promoting our businesses, we must do something to help those children. Wherever they are in Nigeria and I mean in all parts of Africa, in sub-Saharan Africa, millions and millions and millions of children are roaming the streets, their lives a bastion of hopelessness and helplessness. We can't just sit back and say there's nothing we can do or anticipate someone else to do it. We've got to be a part of the change." So we formed the African Continent, we formed the African Women Economic Consortium, but then What would we do? We decided that we will build a community for these children. But what was important was not to build orphanages, because there are too many orphanages in Africa, and actually they're money-making, you know, organizations. And I'm not saying all of them are that way, but the majority of them, there's some very good ones, but the majority of them are orphanages. You can't raise Africa's leadership in orphanages. So we didn't want to start an orphanage. Right. We thought that what we would do is build a village, but this village will be a unique village. This village will take women who are displaced. You know, a lot of women are displaced when their husbands die or because of wars or famine. There's so many displaced women. What if we take those women, take them off the streets and make them parents? What if we screen them, give them a home, provide them with health opportunities, business opportunities, you know, cottage industry? What if we have such women? And then we take these orphan children and give to them in a secured environment and let them take care of these children. And where there's no father, the village becomes the father. That's the whole concept of it takes a village to raise a child. If the woman is not married and there's no man in her life, that she's a parent, but the village becomes the men. Right? all the people mm-hmm. in the village mm-hmm. become involved in the care of these children. So I took that to my village. And after I explained to them, not only would we build a renewable, build a community that people from all over the world will come and see, we are going to make it something exceptional. I wasn't sure what that exceptional thing would be, but they were excited about it. So I decided, okay, mm-hmm. now I'm going to find mm-hmm. somebody who's going to help us make this an exciting, exceptional village. Well, I had the opportunity to travel to Washington, D.C. as a delegate of the, oh gosh, what is this company? It escapes me right now, but it was a world project, but I'll get to it in a minute. But when I was there, mm-hmm. It was Ambassadors for World Peace. Okay, so it was their mm-hmm. big event in Washington, and I met the president of a human relief organization. That's what it's called, human relief organization, Mrs. Olga Krupa. And I shared my vision with her, and she told me, you know what? I think there's somebody you need to speak with who has a fantastic idea, and I think with your program and his, you guys can really come up with something. And his name was Joe Byers. He was invited to come to our event in Michigan, where we gave him an award for his dome. This is a renewable energy dome. And he was very excited about what we were talking about. And he decided that he thought it would be wonderful if we worked together. He builds those domes, and I build the community around the dome. And the dome will provide renewable energy, sanitation, water, all those critical things that communities need, and actually be able to provide electricity for over 240,000 households. So you can imagine how exciting that was. So we came together, and we formed the AWEC Village of Hope Joe Dome. And we're going to have a school from elementary, middle school, high school, and the satellite program, the university. So all of this will be sponsored by African Continental University. We'll have a health clinic. And in other words, we're going to create an environment that will be formidable, if you will, because there's no such thing, you know. So but here's another caveat here, that we want African Americans to come to the Village of Hope. And let it be somewhere that you can come and it becomes yours. You become a part of that village. Mm. You use your expertise and help to build up that village. You get land that you can work and cultivate and do whatever you want to do. And every time you visit Nigeria, you come to the Village of Hope. Under the program, the aspect of the Village of Hope that entertains this whole concept of bringing African Americans home is called Malota Project, which means it's an acronym for Nigeria Welcomes Africans Living Outside the African Continent. All right.
So Malota? I'm sorry.
No, Malota.
Are you cutting you off?
Malota.
Mm-hmm.
That's all right.
Malota.
It means Nigeria. It's an acronym for Nigeria Welcomes Africans Living Outside the African Continent. C is Walota C. Okay, but anyway, so we are excited about that component of it as well, because, you know, this is what I always say, this is my sentiment: for Africa to be where it's supposed to be, we've got to welcome the sons and daughters home. We've got to welcome you back home. You know, when sometimes we think in terms of them and us. We are one, after all, because the people who were taken from my village, those are my relatives that came to the United States. So we are related, you know. Mm-hmm. So the only thing that put us together is years of, being separated.
Separation.
But we're,
right.
you know.
Yeah.
So that's the excitement of the Village of Hope.
This is so exciting. And, you know, we spoke about... there's one part of it that really excited me too that I don't think you mentioned, is the fact that within the Village of Hope, they'll be able to grow their own food. And I think that is so powerful. I mean, it's really self-supporting, self-sustaining, you know, when they can grow their own food, not have to look for outside sources. And I'm sure that it will be really nutritious if they're growing it themselves. So they won't
healthy
be
food.
They won't. Yeah, they won't. They won't be barraged with junk food. Basically, packaged food. You know, a lot of times when you do projects like this, you're going to get lots of canned foods and packaged foods. Mm. And no, that's not the concept. They'll be eating live, fresh fruits and vegetables, and that's so good. I mean, so it'll be healthy.
And
it'll be expanding their mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they'll grow their own livestock. You know, so everything is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And we have lots of land and we have palm plantation in that community. And it's just that is a beautiful village, just plush with palm trees and hibiscus flowers and fruit trees, mangoes, oranges. We have lots and lots. It's just a beautiful place. And that's quite frankly, that's why we selected the Village of Hope. In Nkoro, is the western part of Nigeria. Yeah.
And, you know, I and maybe we can put some pictures up online in the coming week, because a lot of people were attracted to this interview because they really wanted to hear about what you were doing. And I got to see some of the pictures. And when I saw it, I saw a car going in. It was a carport, and it was, you know, just like beautiful, almost like igloos, but just beautiful, beautiful structures, and almost like, in some ways, the structure, like a lot of people are talking about tiny houses now, where they want to build small houses for people. Well, these are bigger than the small houses, and I imagine they're not portable, but just good space, good clean space for people to live in.
They're monolithic designs. Monolithic designs,
mm-hmm.
and they can withstand bad weather. You know, they can withstand tornadoes and all that sort of thing. And the thing about it, you know, when you look at it and when you see the pictures, they look white. All right, that's because but they're not going to stay white. They're going to be colorful, very colorful. For those of you who live in
Debele,
in South Africa.
Africa.
Yeah, so ours will be artistic. So we're going to have artists, and it will be those women that we are that going to live in that village. They're going to create all that art. They're going to have a marketplace where they can weave their baskets, colorful baskets. And it's going to be a tourist attraction. And then we have festivals. Oh, my God, the festivals in this village is ridiculous. So we're going to do all of that. We're trying to revise.
I was just thinking, because, you know, we do community projects here sometimes. We paint these huge murals, you know, in a particular part of the city. And that may be something that people that go back and visit may be able to contribute to the painting of these structures.
Yes.
Because I know that's going to be really, really a tourist attraction. People are going to want to see the Village of Hope and the structures and the people and the colors and, you know, just people coming together and working together. And so when we met, we also spoke about something that a number of us recently got involved with here in Atlanta, that is called community crowdfunding, where we basically, it's so consistent with this concept, because we each talked about our dream project and what we wanted to do here, and how, like you said, you know, my wealth is connected to everybody else. So in the community crowdfunding, we're supporting everybody else in terms of doing their projects and getting the funding that they need. So we want to make sure that people can donate to your project and find you. And I don't know if you have your project listed yet within community crowdfunding, but what's a good way before we get too much further, because I'm going to open it up for questions, but before we get too far into the conversation, what's the best way for people to contact you? Because I know there are going to be a lot of people who want to donate to your project, participate in the Village of Hope, and do whatever they can to help to get that moving and thriving.
Mm-hmm. Right now, they can go to aweconline.org.
Mm-hmm.
And once you get there and you click on our programs, you'll see the Village of Hope. They can make donations there. We have PayPal link there. Mm-hmm. We certainly appreciate that. And one of the things that you know I'm a senior grant writer, right? I'm a senior grant writer, so I provide workshops to help profits and nonprofit organizations to learn how to write grants, because there's so much money out here, people don't know how to access it. And so I teach them how to access these grants, but I also let them know that the grant writing is fantastic because you can get a lot of money for it if you learn how to do it. Now, while you're waiting for that money to come along, there's crowdfunding as well,
mm-hmm.
you see.
Mm-hmm.
So that's two ways you can get your hands on money that will help you make your project a reality. So, yes, I'm quite excited mm-hmm. about the crowdfunding.
Yes.
Thank you for sharing that. You certainly brought that to my reality. So
you're so welcome.
About,
and it's a global program, so we're trying to help organizations around the globe, individuals and organizations around the globe. So if mm-hmm. people want specific information about that, I'm going to give them my email address, because then I can refer them to you and to Rashida Abdullah, who's working with you. But mm-hmm. emails can come to me at my first and last name, Imani, IMANIMAAT, at me.com. So we definitely want to share with people about community crowdfunding and how they can link with you and the projects and the wonderful, wonderful work that you are doing. And so I would like to open up the lines. I have so many questions myself, but I don't want to hog the platform with you. So I'm going to open the lines and see if we have other people who would like to participate in the discussion and maybe ask you questions about the Village of Hope or anything that we've mentioned so far. Okay. So is that okay with you, Dr. Osei?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
So I've got, there's a line, it's a 609 number, and the last four are 5509. I think that's our friend Dina. And we, hold on, trying to open up her line. What I might do is open several of the lines just in case people have to. Hello, Dina, are you there? You may have to open your line. There's also a number 443, and the last four are 7034. I think Dina's line is open now. Hello, good evening. Okay, I'm going to continue opening lines. There's the number 678. It's here in Atlanta. 9191. That looks like Rashida's number. I shouldn't call people out like that, but Rashida, are you there? Hello? You know, the line is opening and then jumping back. I think this may be a little bit of residual from the technical problems last week. No, her line looks like mm-hmm. it's open now, and then it closed again. Brian, do you have any questions while I'm trying to open up the lines for our listeners?
I do. The doctor?
You do.
Yeah.
Yes. What languages are disappearing from the Nigerian populace?
Well, sadly, most of them, and the reason being that it's a mental thing, you know. Mm-hmm. I always tell people that the most powerful tool in the hands of an oppressor is the mind of the oppressed. And that oppressor doesn't have to be a person. It could be an activity that you're doing. And that activity mm-hmm. that we're doing is that we are preventing our children to speak our language because we have associated wealth and intelligence and all of that with the English language. So to speak our language means that you're backwards, you see. So people are now are encouraged, not only are they naming their children foreign names, they've abandoned their names, now they're making them speak foreign languages. You don't even speak their language anymore. So I know Igbo, now a lot of Igbos are now fighting to make sure that their children are learning it, but that's disappearing. Many Igbo kids.
I'm sorry, man, have but a bunch isn't that what Boko Haram is fighting against? Somewhat.
Who?
The Islamic people in the northern, is it the northern part of Nigeria that are going through the villages and they're trying to stop the populace from taking English as a language.
They're doing it the wrong way.
I know, absolutely, they're not the right idea, but the wrong methods.
Yeah. But you know, it's a global world. There's nothing wrong with the children speaking English. There's nothing wrong with that, but it shouldn't be their first language. You know what I'm saying? It shouldn't be their first language. If you look at the Chinese, their first language is not English, it's Chinese. Okay. The Japanese, their first language is Japanese. Latinos, all of that. And there's a reason for that, because much of who you are, much of what you do is attached to your language, right?
Yes.
If you look at the, people wonder, why do our children struggle so much? If you take a five-year-old child, right? You take a five-year-old child who speaks Igbo, right? And you send him to school. Now he has to learn a new language.
Yes.
He cannot relate in school based on the skills he already has. He's got to learn something totally new. So you're taking him back to infancy, so to speak, to learn.
Yes.
So then if he can't catch up with a child who already speaks English, then you assume, oh, he's so stupid, right? And you treat him accordingly.
Right.
So we're setting our children, every time we take our children and they're speaking their language, then we put them in school, we set them backwards. People don't understand they're doing that. You see, it's important that the schools teach in the children's language and also introduce English as, you know, part of what they need to learn. But the critical thing they must learn is their language.
Absolutely.
I have some Nigerian kids here, and I'm trying to talk to them. They look at me like I'm crazy.
Oh, no.
And immediately they say, if the mother is Igbo, the father is Igbo, or the mother is Yoruba, the father is Yoruba, and I just start speaking the language to them, and they look at me like, what is that? But you're Igbo. Go ahead.
I wanted to expand a little bit, because I think a lot of people aren't understanding the connection between language and culture, and pride in oneself and one's history and customs and all of that. So talk a little bit about how language relates to that, because I think a lot of people really just don't understand how important that is.
When you speak your language, you're able to articulate, right? You can articulate your thoughts. You can articulate your objectives, your goals. You can articulate it quite easily in your language, right? Because that's how you're raised. That's what you understand as a child. Most of the things in the house, even, you know, products in the house are in Igbo, right? They're not in English. So those things connect you to your environment. Your language connects you to environment, because everything is that you're taught in your language, right? The tree is not tree, it's OCC. The house is not house, it's Ulo. Your hand is not hand, it's Aka. You understand what I'm saying? So when you speak, you associate everything to that language. Now, when you get to school, it's no longer OCC, now it's tree. It's no longer Aka, it's hand. You've got to relearn all of that. So when you abandon your language, that means you're abandoning aspects of your being, of your culture.
Once you've done
that, you've given up who you are. And we do that to our children. We do that to our children. And we wonder why we're having the struggles we're having. Look, my argument is always, look at those nations that are making it. Ask, what are they speaking? What are they speaking? Mm-hmm. Yes, America is doing well. It speaks English. That is its language. The Chinese are doing exceptionally well. They speak Chinese. Japanese are speaking Japanese. And not only that, they celebrate their culture. You can't go to China today and tell the Chinese not to celebrate. Are you crazy?
Right.
You don't end up planning together. You wouldn't even have the audacity. It would not work. When you go to China, they make you get, you have to sit on the floor, you have to drink whatever. You know, you have to respect their culture. They expect you to do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But now, we try to separate. And you know, that's something that, you know, is a vestige of colonialism slavery and everything. I mean, you know, it was the intent to separate Africans from their language, from their cultures, from their customs. And so, you know, kind of pulling back that, you know, into the roots. It looks like I was successful in opening the lines. They're all lit up. So if there's anyone, I know Rashida was calling me to try to tell me I can't get in, but perhaps, Rashida, your line is open. If you'd like to participate, you're the one who introduced me to Dr. Osamiri. So we'd love to hear from you if you'd like to try. You're unmuted. At least according to the board, you're unmuted. So I apologize if you're speaking and we can't hear you. Normally, I also invite people who are listening on computer, because a lot of people just listen from their computer and then want to join the discussion. And it looks like I'm just so glad that we're able to have you speak this evening. You know, didn't have any of the music to welcome you with, you know, the correct way, but we're just very, very grateful for you coming and spending this time with us this evening. I told the story when we met that my first trip to Africa was to a village not too far from where you're doing building the Village of Hope. And I remember when I went there, gosh, it was early 80s. I was committed because there were a lot of children in the area, and I know that there were families taking care of the children. And I just remember it was like a little community where the children just always came to where we stayed, and you know, we're always walking and holding hands. And when I left there, I was so sad, and I said, I'm coming back. At some point, I'm coming back. So, you know, I'm so grateful to you for connecting me back to that part of me that really wanted to go back to that area and work with the children. So that will, you definitely have one volunteer here who's coming to participate and contribute to what you're doing. Very, very, very grateful. So what else would you like to share with us about the village or about the connection of Africans in the diaspora to the village and to the university? Because I think...
For one thing, for the university, just whoever is out there, we're looking for to fill the staff. We're looking for deans for the different colleges. So if there's anybody there with a doctorate degree and who's interested in teaching and being a part of this exciting university, please let me know. As a matter of fact, is it all right if I give my phone number? Is that all right?
Oh, please. No, that's fine. And people should keep in mind that it's going to be online. So you don't necessarily have to move to Nigeria to participate because it is going to be online. So that's a beautiful thing. And I told you, I have lots of people I want to refer to you as well. But please give our listeners your number.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you want to know about the Village of Hope or about the university, or you want to hear about a grant writing, please contact me at 248-773-1857. Although that's a Michigan number, I live in Atlanta. I just never changed the number. I want you to call me directly. That's my direct line. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. I think your phone's going to be lit up over the next few days.
Oh, that will be exciting. That will be exciting. You know, one of the things that I want to share The other thing I want to share, and I perhaps I've said it already, but I just want to repeat it. It's really very important that we as Africans understand that we are one, and we have a responsibility to grow our communities, both here and in Africa. I would like to see African Americans have enough, and I praise those who have already taken it upon themselves to go to Africa and start doing things. But I also encourage Africans from the continent to understand that we are responsible also for working with our own brothers and sisters here who are very eager to know about their homeland. Mm-hmm. We should not, you know, be so rigid that we don't share. I get a lot of calls from young people who are trying to learn about Africa, and part of what they say is, well, we just don't know. Sometimes people don't want to talk to us about it, and I don't understand that. You know, we are brothers and sisters, and it becomes our responsibility. Yeah. Just like I say, if Africa is going to be built up, African Americans must get involved because everyone else is getting involved in this. The Chinese are all over Africa, and they're doing wonderful things. Mm-hmm. But you have as much right to be there. You have mm-hmm. as much right to
Absolutely.
Be there as anybody else. You know,
Absolutely.
We have a lot of work, a lot of opportunities in Africa, a lot of opportunities. I mean, Africa is not that poor place people think about. There's a lot of opportunities mm-hmm. there. And so, if anybody is interested, particularly, I'm looking for a lot of women to join the African Women Economic Consortium. We can do a lot of work, mm-hmm. a lot of good things for the continent, a lot of good things. So
mm-hmm.
I hope I get some calls.
You got another volunteer here. I would love to be part of the consortium. I mean, I think
wonderful.
That's the Women's Economic Consortium. I think it's going to do major, major things. And there are a lot of, there's an organization here, and I don't want to call the name wrong. I don't want to say the name incorrectly, but there are a number of women's organizations, African Americans, women's organizations that are looking at economic development and community development. So what I will do is connect you with some of those that I have participated with and know about or spoken to, addressed at particular conferences and so forth. So I think one of the things I love about this radio show is just being able to connect people and organizations
yes.
and folks who yeah. have a passion for helping people and helping the community. So and once we're connected. So we will yeah. definitely be doing some great work together.
Yeah, one more thing, if you don't mind. This is very important. We have a project next year, African Women mm-hmm. Economic Consortium and the International Women Think Tank. We have an annual event called Against All Odds. And in the past, what we did was we honored people who have done exceptional things in the community. But what we're doing this time is that we are honoring or giving young people an opportunity, young people from the ages of 15 to 35, mm-hmm. the opportunity to present. Mm-hmm. It's called Against All Odds, Young Entrepreneurial Minds. We're going to have judges on that particular mm-hmm. day. That's October the 22nd, 2016. I'll have that information out. It's on my website. If anybody goes to AWEC, mm-hmm. AWEConline.org, you will see, go mm-hmm. to our program, and you'll see it, Young Entrepreneurial Minds. And what they do is we want young people who have fantastic ideas to come, and we're going to select 10 of them, and they will be judged. We'll have judges there. It's a black tie affair. It's a gala affair. That is going to include this. Now, the winning participant gets $10,000. The second gets $5,000, and then the third person gets $2,500. So, and then the other, even if some of them who don't win, we're going to have all these business organizations in there that may like what they have to offer and offer them a job,
them
an opportunity.
Oh, nice.
You know, so
is that going to be here
It's here.
Is that going to be here in Atlanta or?
It's in Atlanta. It's in Atlanta, but November the 14th. in November. Mm-hmm. It's all on the website. We're doing the audition here at the Pinellas Branch Library. And so if any young person out there has some fantastic idea that they think we need to know about, I'm going to encourage you to come out there. Call me if you want to be a part of it, or if you know some child that can be a part of it. We'll do the audition. Mm-hmm. If you're selected, this is a big opportunity mm-hmm. for you, because you'll be in front of all these
wonderful
big businesses. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll make sure that the word gets out. And I just wanted to share with you and our listeners, I'm seeing a message across my screen from Blog Talk Radio. It says, We are seeing problems with one of our recording servers, which may interrupt some shows. Our engineering and product teams are investigating. We apologize, and we'll send updates as we have them. So I certainly apologize to anyone who's online who wanted to speak or who wanted to ask a question of Dr. Osinieri. And I'm glad we were just able to move forward with the interview, but there were definitely some system problems this time and last week where we weren't able to hold the interview at all. So we appreciate everybody's patience and we're just glad that you've held on. I see nobody has hung up. So that's a good sign. Everybody has still been listening in, and I'm sure you'll get lots of calls from our listeners. So
I look forward to it.
Any final thoughts that you'd like to share with us?
Well, I just want to say that I am very, very excited, and I would like to thank you for this wonderful opportunity, because I consider it an auspicious occasion, because every time that I have the opportunity to talk with my community, mm-hmm. because you are my mm-hmm. community, I mean, it energizes me to do even more. I feel like I'm reconnecting with my people, and that's the way it should be. The more we have these discussions, the more we break that barrier, you know. And mm-hmm. I want you to
mm-hmm.
learn from
Absolutely.
Me. I want you to learn from me as I want to learn from you, because there are things
mm-hmm.
about you that I want to learn as well. I don't need to be in the dark,
oh,
and
wonderful.
I don't want to assume that it's just me you learn mm-hmm. from. I learn from you as well. That's how.
So it's two ways. Yes, it goes both ways, and it's beautiful. So I thank Rashida Abdullah for connecting us, and she's texted me a couple times, and the last one said, "Oh shucks," because she really wanted to participate in the discussion. But thank you, Rashida. I know you're out there. I think that I won't start doing shout outs, because there are a lot of people on the line, and I appreciate all of you and hopefully they can get the kinks worked out. And I said last time that we may need to move to another platform if Blog Talk Radio is having issues, but hopefully they'll get it together. Like I said, this is my 95th show. Yay! And there are always wonderful shows. Thank you so much. And we appreciate you coming, and we will be speaking with you soon, helping to set up your community crowdfunding platform. And just continuing to move forward with the university, with the Village of Hope, and everything. Thank you for all that you do and all of your inspiration.
Thank you very much, Dr.
With that,
thank you.
Appreciate it. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian. And I wish everyone a good evening. And I may try to play some music. And, you know, if it doesn't happen, it's okay. We understand. Thank you all, and have a wonderful evening.
Okay. You as well.
Take care now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. No, queuing up the music, and the music is not playing. Okay, well, I'll just say good night to everyone, and hope to hear you, and everyone tune in again next week. Bye-bye now.